Planet Rock Breakfast, Moth Into Flame from the brand new Metallica album Hardwired to Self-Destruct, which is out today. And I'm very pleased to say, joining us on the show this morning, James Hetfield. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good.
It's been a long time since we met. I'm talking a long, long time. The Music for Nations days when you were in Carnaby Street above the shop there, the early days, and a lot of things have changed since then.
Yeah, a couple things. I tell you, our career has been a beautiful and long, wonderful journey. Still 35 years, and we're still making some new music. We're loving it.
What are your memories of those early days? Because it was on a budget then, shall we say, because when you started out, you were doing everything to get the gigs. You got the deal with Megaforce and in the UK with Music for Nations, a small independent label, which did wonders for you in this country.
Absolutely. I tell you, we're grateful for anyone who has helped us along the way and supported and flown the Metallica flag. Yeah, you know, the early days for me was pretty blurry. You know, we were just doing the next right thing, the next thing we thought was going to help us conquer the world. You know, that was a childhood dream, you know, basically just to get out there and keep playing and love what we do, you know, and make money at the passion we have called music. So Music for Nations, no doubt, was a wonderful beginning, and all the people that were there certainly helped us out with the first tours and all of that fun stuff.
As well as the first tours, that first Donington appearance, I actually found a photograph from 1987, I think it was, and you guys were still in full-on party mode then, and you signed the photograph Waiting for Drinks.
Sorry about that, but that was the truth at that point. Yeah, you know what? We're just young kids, you know, first time on tour throughout Europe and the UK, and we were living the dream, man. And we still are in just a different way. now we're living the dream with a little bit of white hair.
35 years is a long time. I mean, when you first started out, obviously you wanted to reach the top, you wanted to stay there, but did you ever think that you'd still be here, still doing it, still at the top of your game all these years later?
I think yes. I mean, it might sound ridiculous to say yes, but I never thought anything but that. I never thought I would do anything except play music in Metallica, and it's still happening. So maybe this is some self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts, but I tell you, we didn't think we'd be doing anything else. You know, if I wasn't doing this, I'd be trying to do this.
It's also one of those things as well. Throughout those 35 years, there's been ups, there's been down, there's triumph, there's turmoil, a lot of sadness in the band as well. But you've kind of come through it together as a band.
Yeah, you know, we're a family of brothers. We've gone through, yeah, the horrors of the bus accident and fires and broken bones and you know, riots here and there, and then all the wonderful stuff, you know, celebrating, getting in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, playing in Antarctica, I mean, playing all the seven continents. We've accomplished a lot of wonderful things together, and to me, it's life. It's we've done lots of adventures together, and it's like we're explorers, you know, the four of us.
What do you put that success down to? Is it the fact that you have been effectively in a marriage all these years as a band? Because you literally live in and out of each other's pockets when you're on the road, and especially those early days.
Sure. You know, you get to know each other really well, inside and out. And yeah, we've kind of done it all together, really. And I can't believe that we all now have healthy children and have families and wives and all this wonderful regular stuff that keeps us grounded, and we get to still do what we're doing out here, you know, being kids. You know, we're boys trapped in man's bodies at this point, you know, and we get to get on stage, and the music makes us young, keeps us young.
Planet Rock Breakfast, joined by James Hetfield from Metallica on the show this morning. The first album, James, in 8 years. Let's just say that again. The first album in 8 years. That's the longest ever between albums, isn't it?
It is. And we've just wanted to torture people. That was our main objective, including ourselves. Gosh, a lot has gone on in 8 years. It doesn't seem like it's been 8 years. But I know for the fans, they've been itching for it for a long time. Yeah, 8 years. I see three of that was taken up with Death Magnetic touring. We did an album with Lou Reed. We did got inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We played seven continents in 1 year, including Antarctica. Made a movie. Did a couple festivals, Orion festivals that we were trying to put together. There's been a lot that's been going on. And what was important to us is that we had enough time to make the record. We need time after, you know, once you open that riff box, you start writing, you can't stop it. So we needed to clear the calendar, you know, to make this record.
I think I'm right in saying as well, when you first started work a number of years ago on the album, Rick Rubin was still in the frame then, wasn't he?
Well, I guess so. Well, we didn't really make a decision. We didn't have a real solid decision on who the producer was going to be. And we certainly had a great time and a great experience with Rick. We were also very interested in Greg Fiddleman, who ended up doing it because of his sonics. He was the engineer on Death Magnetic. He's since, you know, produced a couple other records and done a great job at it. And he did the sound for Through the Never, the movie, and we were blown away with that sonically. So we really challenged him to become a producer on this one. So the three of us were co-producing, Lars, myself, and Greg.
A lot of people have actually, say, been involved with Metallica throughout the years. You mentioned Greg. He's been in bands as well. So he knows what it's like from the other side of the fence, too.
That's always been a great bonus of any producer that's been a musician. He knows sounds, and especially if they're a guitar player, it's a, you know, extra bonus for me. Greg was a guitar player in Rhino Bucket, and even, you know, prior to that, Bob Rock, who did a lot of our records, you know, a guitar player in the Paolas. So having a musician as a producer makes a lot of sense.
A lot different now to what it was, for example, when you were doing Kill 'Em All. Things have changed so dramatically, not just in recording, but the way you work as a band.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you learn a lot, and you can't not learn when you're in the studio. You know, 24/7, we're super curious and we're soaking up so much information about why do you do that? What's that thing do? And all of the gadgets, and, you know, we're gear junkies too. So different things, what did that do? And making, say, here's the sound I want. How do you do that? And then they do it. So, from Kill 'Em All, where we weren't really much a part of it. We were just the musicians out there and, okay, stay out. Don't show up for the mixes, go away, we've got it, to, hey, we're running the show now, and we kind of know what we're doing.
Also, I think I'm right in saying about 18 months all told from start to finish, from actually, you know, laying the tracks down initially as demos to the full recording process. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say it's about right. I would say that this record was very comfortable because we did it at home. We did it at HQ, which is our second home, our sanctuary. It's all the fun stuff that, you know, it's a man cave, basically. All the stuff's not allowed in the house at home is hung up on the walls. And we get to go there and jam and hang out. And I tell you, it's so comfortable when you're in your garage. I mean, it's basically our giant garage at this point. And you're not on a time crunch where, oh, you got to have all the vocals done by 4 o'clock. Oh, my God. You know, I'm not feeling great. You know, let's come in the day after tomorrow and I'll feel better and we'll knock something out. We'll try something better. And it's nice having that luxury of no time constraint.
No writing credits this time for Kirk either. Was it true that he actually had a lot of ideas on an iPhone that he lost and had to kind of start again from scratch?
I don't know. That's what he tells us. So I take that as the truth. No, he submitted some riffs. We all pile in our ideas, and they're in the giant Metallica riff pile. And Lars is the one, since he's not writing any of the riffs, he sifts through them, and he's able to identify him. He's got a great ear for the riff, and he'll hear things that I don't hear. You know, I think, hey, this riff is great, and yeah, but what about this part of this one? And no, it's not so good, and oh, let's take that. And, you know, so he's not a guitar player, so it's an unorthodox approach at picking riffs, which is great. But as far as Kirk, Kirk was not present in the studio. He was, you know, dealing with life. He had a lot of life things going on for himself, which he'll choose to talk about if he wants. But, you know, Lars and I steering the ship as usual, going through the riffs, creating the songs, and I got to do a lot of guitar stuff that I was missing around Death Magnetic and Saint Anger. You know, some of the harmony guitar things, harmony vocals, you know, a little more layering like the Black Album.
The way music is delivered now compared to how it was back in the day is totally different. We've got social media now. And on this album, you've not done one, you've not done two, you've done videos for every single track.
Yeah, quite an undertaking, I must say. The Metallica crew, the Inner Circle, all the inner management here have done an amazing job at doing that. And, you know, getting songs out to young, new, crazy videographers, people who have ideas, people wanting to get their art and craft out there on a budget, which we said, hey, there's only so much money for each video, make it work. And they did. It's unbelievable. From the animation to the real life to the multimedia to, I mean, there are videos that we're not even in, which is really cool. And I tell you, doing 12 videos for the album is it's a huge undertaking. And, you know, between the end of the album and the drop of the album, getting all that done and put out there, we're proud of everyone.
Finally, looking at live stuff, you've got the House of Vans gig tonight for fans, and you've done the festivals, you've done the Sonospheres, the Downloads, the Glastonburys. A tour is long overdue, right?
We love the touring. We love playing live. I tell you, the 2 hours on stage makes all the other 22 worth it, for sure. You know, I have the joy of getting to watch the fans. That's what I love doing. I get up there and I see how music changes people. You know, they show up and they're a little stiff or they're whatever. They're worrying about crap. And then by the end of the night, they are loose and they're having some fun. But yeah, you know, the Vans gig is a nice and tight little area. And we love small gigs as well. It's always fun to get in people's faces, and to actually see people's faces is a joy.
So UK shows in the pipeline in the future, possibly?
Oh, for sure. We've got at least the next year and a half lined up for, what are we calling it? We're calling it Worldwired Tour. So we're planning on being out for quite a while. You know, at our age, 53, our mind, body, and spirit can do so much. So we're going to pace ourselves so we can be 110% every show. So, you know, 2 weeks at a time, day on, day off, that's what it takes for us to feel good and running on all cylinders. So we'll be out for a long time.
James, congratulations on a stunning album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct, and let's hope it's not too long before we see you back on the road here in the UK.
Agreed. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.